Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And we are here. We're here. It's Thursday, November 7th. And we are here for an emergency episode about the election.
Yeah. Super calm. A normal week. Not. Yeah, I mean, we've been...
We always know when we need to do another episode
because we've been talking about
it. We text, we send screenshots. Like, Sam and I'm sure you all relate to this. You have, like, a conversation with someone that takes place, like, via text, via TikTok, via Instagram.
I want to start with this. So I had a client say to me, she's like, last night must have been, like, so much easier for you. Because, like, you have all these skills and you have this awareness. And I was like, girl, I slept for 2 hours. And during those 2 hours, I had a dream. I was being chased by a gorilla. I was not okay. I was not well. I fell asleep at probably around, 1:30. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of attempted to tune out by that point. Mm-hmm. Woke up with a gorilla chasing me. In my dream, and saw that what state had come through. I think I saw Pennsylvania had come through. And that was when I knew it was over. Mm-hmm. I knew it was done. Mm-hmm. She wasn't coming back from this.
Did you watch it live, on TV, or what was your method of keeping up with things?
Started out on TV.
Yeah.
I was watching the incredible Steve Kornacki. On MSNBC. Yeah. My sister and I, we were watching it together. We turned it off at probably 11:30. Mm-hmm. That was when I kind of was I got that sinking pit in my stomach. And I was like, this is not going well.
Yeah.
What about you? What was your experience?
We'd put Peyton, my daughter, to bed, and Mike, my husband, I had taken a shower and come downstairs, and he had CNN on, and I was like, I can't watch this yet. This is too intense. So I made him put on I think The Office, and I was starting to do things on my phone. And then I was like, no, I need to watch it. So we need to turn it on. So we turned it on. So yeah, it was chaotic, I feel like, because my husband was just like, whatever you want to do is what I'll do. So he was like, if you want me to turn it on, if you want me to turn it off, just let me know. So I feel like I would get really frustrated at the TV and turn it off, and then I would want it back on. And I ate a large amount of cookies, and I was just watching the New York Times dumb needle, the needle just kept going more and more. And I went upstairs, I think at around midnight to bed, but I was just watching everything on my phone. And I think I finally tried to go to sleep once Pennsylvania was called and I knew that it was over. So yeah, we didn't cope better than anyone else.
No, there was no, mindfulness happening. And I don't think I'm a big believer in, and I say this all the time, you are allowed to respond to the things that happen to you.
Yes.
And, this was a huge deal.
Yes.
And so whatever your reaction was, if you couldn't sleep, if you just depression slept through the evening because it was too much, I think everybody was figuring out how to adjust to this gut punch. Now, I know there are some people that are very happy, and
they're probably not listening to this podcast though, Sam.
That is probably
they don't need an election processing episode.
No, they're feeling great. And I think in the days since, mm-hmm. however you've needed to like process and make sense of it is what you needed to do.
Yeah.
Amanda and I both kind of started feeling, I mean, I'm speaking for the both mm-hmm. of us now, but I think last night we started feeling a little more stable.
Yeah.
With it. Not like totally, but you just kind of said, do we need to do this? Like, do we dare? And I was like, I think I dare. Like, I think we need and to I think, do an episode. Yeah.
And I think I want to say, I think this is grief. That's yes, the best way absolutely. I can understand this. And we are in grief along with you. So we are mm-hmm. going to like embody being like our higher selves, thinking about what we can do going forward, and like probably lower selves of like, I feel like I'm going to come in and out of being a therapist and being a human on this, and like yep. being rageful and upset, and also being like, what does my higher self think we can do, and what is my best advice? And I just like want to normalize that, because I think sometimes people feel like if I feel different ways, it means I'm like falling back, or there's something wrong, or why do I feel all these different ways? And this is normal. This is grief. I mean, yesterday and last night, like I would feel better, and then I would like see something and I would like burst into tears, and then I would feel better, and then I would feel worse. And, you know, I had clients today who were tearful and I had to hold back tears. And then I, you know, we were talking and I was feeling a little better. And then now as I'm talking right now, I'm feeling worse. And I think that that's
yeah.
normal. And the best thing you can do is and one of the things you have the most control over is at least don't beat yourself up for how you feel right now.
Yeah. This is not a typical event.
Yeah.
This is a big deal. This is going to be a little bit messy.
Yeah.
But we both threw up question boxes mm-hmm. in our stories
mm-hmm.
and we have reviewed those. And there's like a couple of themes. One of the big ones that mm-hmm. I noticed first was how to cope mm-hmm. with this and how to process. I was so angry personally, mm-hmm. just at all of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if you're sitting there kind of like, how do I make sense of this? How do I work through this? How do I move forward?
Mm-hmm.
I think there has to be a sense of embracing the mess.
Mm.
And even more critical than that is embracing the glimmers that you see, mm. embracing the things that give you hope, embracing the things that keep you motivated, because grief like this and transition like this is multifaceted, and it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've had a couple of people bring up like, well, like when I started feeling hopeful, but then I felt like I wasn't
yeah.
like fighting hard enough. And no. Like, you have to have hope to fight.
Yes.
If you aren't acknowledging that there's still something to fight for and still feel hope, what is the point of getting up?
Mm-hmm.
And I think something that's been concerning to me are the amount of people that I see in comments
mm.
of like posts and videos that I have seen on my feed of people being like, I can't go on. Like, mm-hmm. I won't survive this. Mm-hmm. I won't get up. I think that is very dangerous verbiage
mm-hmm.
to say, I feel defeated, I feel frustrated, I feel overwhelmed, I feel angry, I feel like whatever word on the emotion wheel you want to whip out for this,
mm-hmm.
by all means, say that. Don't say, I won't survive this.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. your brain is listening to that messaging. And so if you notice your brain is like going to that space mm-hmm. of deep, deep despair, don't attach to it like, oh, I'm not going to survive this. I can't get through this. It's too big. It's too much. Say, I feel despair right now.
Or I feel like I'm not going to survive this.
I feel like I'm not going to survive this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think for those that really have fragile mental health at this moment, and this feels like it's kind of pushing them to the edge, I really urge you to fight that, to reach out to your support systems, to ask people for help, to call support lines, to call your doctor, to go to the ER if you feel unstable, because this man, this administration, you are worth infinitely more than them. And we need you here. You need to be here. you have importance. You matter. There's things that you can do. There's ways to take care of yourself. And so I've just seen that language and it's just made me feel concerned.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, Sam. And I think that I think it's so hard because I think we are all going through ups and downs of feeling despair, feeling hope, feeling better, feeling worse. And that's like, this is a roller coaster and is normal. And I think I would add also that if you are someone who is prone to despair, like right now is going to be a really crappy time to be on social media.
Yeah.
Because, which is why I think we wanted to do an episode, because we wanted to give you a place like off social media to process this and hear some hope maybe. Right now is shitty. Like I had someone reach out to me, like a man who I don't know, who's a troll, like DM me, like your body, my choice. Yeah. And so like, I think that there are people that are gloating. I think that's hard. I think that this is prime clickbait season. And one thing I wish people understood is, which you and I know from like being content creators, is people use these opportunities to gain followings and conspiracy theories, extreme takes, finding the worst, even if someone has good intentions of trying to like warn someone about a possibility, extremeness tends to come out during these times because someone's like, oh, if I share this, I know it will get a lot of attention. And it's like purposeful in some ways where people aren't just like, how can I help on the internet? They're like, how can I benefit from this situation? By get like they're motivated by likes and build. People build followings during crises, which is insane, but it is true. For not the right reasons.
And we mentioned this in the podcast we did on the hurricane as well.
And people know now and they like purposefully capitalize on it. So there are going to be like extreme things going on. And I was like hysterical last night when I saw there was like a tweet about people talking about like Project 2025 and stuff like that. And it's not ignoring things or burying your head in the sand to not be on social media for a while.
And I don't
– because there's nothing you can do.
Right.
Right.
Right. And I also think social media is not real life.
Yeah.
That is why in some of my content lately, I've been like, get out and touch grass. Like literally, you have to ground yourself if you are doom scrolling and it starts to feel like too much. I think having rock solid boundaries with the content that you are consuming right now can make all of the difference in how you ride this emotional wave as we get further away from kind of like the initial moment, which would be like election day, essentially. So I completely agree. And also I've seen that your body, my choice thing, and that is the thing that sends me into an absolute violent rage. I just... It is so disgusting. It is so sick. And it is the thing that makes me question humanity, I think. When I saw that, I just don't understand how there's so many men who could hate me so much and think that I am deserving of so little. And I say this as a very privileged white woman, right? And so I understand. I also want to note that too, that I think all of us, whoever you are listening, we all have varying scales of oppression within this. And so I can't imagine how Black women feel. I can't even imagine how queer people feel. I can't, you know, trans people. I can't fathom it when I see that. And it is so, it's so disgusting and hurtful. And the anger that you've seen of any of like the clickbait, it's not that you're not being your higher self if you get like angry, pissed off, or furious, or like blind rage when you see that. Like, that is the whole point. They want you.
No, they're doing it on purpose.
They want you to feel that way. And so like, I just want you to know that's how I felt. And I had to, I almost shared a post about it to my stories. I almost did. And I said to myself, I really paused and I said, A, why am I giving this person additional exposure and airspace?
Yeah.
And B, this does not serve my audience at all. They already know dicks exist. Like, clearly, that has been made acutely clear to us in the last week. I don't need to remind people of that.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I had people reach out that were like, how do I tell my daughters? Right. How do I tell my children? And that I think has been so – like I've just been so viscerally in the experience of having a daughter and all of that. And I think that that is – I don't have really the words. I mean, I'm lucky, I guess, that my daughter is young and I don't have to have a conversation with her about it. But I think to anyone who asks that, who has kids, you may have already talked to them about it, but I think like kids are perceptive. They know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Kids are online, kids are on TikTok, kids talk about it in school. Yeah. And I think sometimes parents are like, I have to have all the answers. I have to be strong for them, and you do have to be sturdy for them for sure. But I think acting like you're not upset, acting like you aren't impacted by it, acting like you aren't scared also doesn't serve them either. And you can say you're scared, you can acknowledge what they're seeing, right? If they see you're upset and you're like, I'm not upset, that's very confusing for a child. So I think being honest with that, and what I just keep trying to come back to, even just like as a leader, you know, at Therapy for Women, is like, I don't know what will happen, but like, I will have people's backs. And that's kind of the perception I've tried to have with my clients, with my community, with my daughter, you know, with people that have less privilege than me, is like, we don't know what's going to happen, but we can make a commitment to support the people that need our support and that matter.
When I worked in the emergency room, and I would, you know, someone would die.
Yeah.
My job was to help, you know, either A, deliver that information or support them through the aftermath of hearing that information. And, you know, a lot of times I would have young parents die. I would have old parents die. And spouses or family members would say to me, you know, what do I say to their kids? I don't know what to say. Yeah. And I would always lead with, you have to tell them the truth, because exactly like you said, they are perceptive and they understand. And I also think this goes for like anybody in your life, any younger kid, child, adolescent, anybody in your life that you are around, that might ask you questions about these things, that might talk to you about these things. It doesn't just have to be like your child per se.
Mm-hmm.
I think to be honest, to use very clear words. And then I think to circle it to, instead of being focused on having answers, focus on your values.
Mm.
You know, I would tell people, if they were like, well, how do I tell this kid that their parent is dead? I would say you have to wrap them in love, and you have to wrap them in protection, and you have to let them know that they're not alone. And exactly like you said, that you're, you know, going to have their back. And so I think for this situation, it's the same thing. You say, you know what? In our house, we value love. We value acceptance. Mm-hmm. We value patience. We value respect, you know, and say, just because someone else in the world doesn't value those things doesn't mean we don't value those things. And I would even say this to people who are really questioning kind of like humanity as a whole and saying like, it feels so dark right now. Like it feels so... like, I don't believe in humanity. I'm done. Mm-hmm. We're cooked, whatever. It starts with us.
Yeah.
And if you, as a single solitary person, believe in the values of respect, love, patience, support, advocacy, like joy,
freedom,
like if freedom, if you believe in those things, you are the thing that makes humanity good. And so I really want to give you that hope that those things are not dead, because I think I can speak pretty confidently for you that you and I both very much value those things. And so whether you're having this conversation with yourself, whether you're having this conversation with someone else, how do you implement those values then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's such a good point. We aren't alone. Millions of people did stand up and choose not to vote for him. And millions of people do feel the way that we feel. But it is, yeah, I mean, I received a lot of questions that were just like, how do I exist in the world knowing the majority of America feels this way? And I think it, I think anytime we zoom out too much, right? Like if we, I mean, if we zoom out too far of, you know, the world, it gets real, I mean, America is a really big country, unfortunately, and fortunately. And I think that that's what's really hard is that we have to try to keep focused on our ourselves, our families, our communities. That's where we have the ability to create change as well.
Also, can I get into a bit of a history lesson here?
Yes, please.
Can we have Sam's History Corner?
Yes. Is that, can that be part of the podcast? People that are despairing, that are like, everything is going to fall. Like, because yes, I wanted to ask you this, Sam, of just, I know you're a history nerd, of just some of us, myself included, who are just terrified, who are like, what comes next? What is possible? What are the limits of what can be changed?
Right.
Give us a history lesson.
Well.
Or a government lesson.
Twofold. Well, threefold. One, follow Sharon Says So immediately. I follow her, truly. Read her book, Swall and the Mighty. We are not paid for this shout out. But truly, like, she will explain it to you in such, like, calming, straightforward language.
Yeah, you're like, Sam, I mean, I am a super fan as well of Sharon Says So. Yeah. Sam, like, because she's such a history nerd, like, goes to the book clubs, reads all the books.
I do. The worst, the most boring books that I just like, I just eat them up. And my friends are like, why are you the way that you are? Anyway.
Well, I have to say, I text Sam sometimes. I'm like, give me a history book because I read history books to fall asleep.
And then I send you one and you go, not like that.
Because you give me interesting history books. Fun fact, like, because I can't sleep, I read really weird history books. Like, I read, like, the history of skiing.
Oh, that kind of stuff. Oh, okay. All right. I'll think of that for next time.
The history of, like, you know, Florida. Like, it's not, anyway, like, a zippy, fun history book. But anyway.
Okay. Well, helpful to know next time you ask for a suggestion.
You probably don't have any because you're like, all of the history books I read are like interesting and not a textbook.
Correct. So I'll do my best though. I'll start trying to expand for you so that way I can give you a suggestion. But anyway, so America has always been an unsafe place. And not always in physical terms of physical safety, but I think for any person of color, physical safety has always been a threat. The United States has not been an incredibly friendly, progressive place.
It's founded on Christian values, unfortunately.
It is founded on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and all of that were written with the expressed interest of having the separation of church and state.
But they were also written by white men, and it was for white men.
Who were slave owners.
Yes.
And thought that was a good thing.
Yeah.
So I think from the founding, it was built on hierarchical systems of oppression. So I think for some people, this feels very new to feel marginalized. And I would really encourage you to take a step back and realize that this is your chance to gain empathy for our marginalized brothers and sisters and they, thems, who have felt this way for decades, for centuries. I mean, we, you know, if you just look at World War II, right? We are off on the beaches of Normandy, storming our way through Europe, fighting for liberty, you know, liberating all these different countries from the power of an absolute authoritarian dictator, a fascist, you know, all of this stuff. And Black men were fighting, Black women were serving as nurses, and they come home to a segregated country that is still lynching them.
Yeah.
And I just, I bring that up to say this idea that Americans are drawn to more conservative, oppressive feeling values mm-hmm. is not new.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, this idea of law and order, mm-hmm. this idea of punishment
mm-hmm.
of others, that there has to be some type of visceral, tangible punishment for things and getting back at people and all this sort of stuff. Like, this is not new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say that not to be doom and gloom. I mm-hmm. say that to actually normalize
mm-hmm.
and to bring attention to it's not new. It's just our turn.
Mm.
So,
and I think especially some of us as millennials,
yes,
as white women millennials, yes. even, who is probably like the average podcast listener,
right?
Because that is what we are. You know, I think it's hard because we grew up in the 90s and that, like, where it was
super
like
hopeful.
Yeah, everything yeah. was amazing. You know, then Barack Obama is elected president.
Yeah.
We're entering into post-racial world. I mean, if you would have talked to any like black person, they would have told you that wasn't true. But I think that's what is so hard. That is why so many of us, I think, were so shocked when Trump was elected.
Yeah, in 2016.
Yeah, in 2016. And I think somehow, right, I don't know, I somehow lured myself, I guess, into, because of everything that happened with storming the Capitol and all of the other damage that was done,
mm-hmm.
that it wouldn't happen again.
Right.
And I think, yeah, to your point, I think remembering what most of the country is founded on and what the country was not so long ago.
No. No.
And change also often comes, right, two steps forward.
Yeah. Three steps
one
back.
One step back. Three steps back.
I say this because I know some of you might be listening and maybe you feel neutral about the results and maybe kind of this idea of like, well, I'm tired of being negative about the country. Me speaking truth to power is not being negative. There are so mm-hmm. many things I love about mm-hmm. this country. I love the people. I love our ridiculous culture. I love our food. I mm-hmm. love the idea of the principles that we are working towards to perfect. Mm-hmm. I love the ideas of liberty that we have and this idea that we're a melting pot. I love our stories. I love that we are a country of immigration, which I think is what makes the immigration policy people are looking for so particularly devastating.
Yes.
There is so much that I love, but you have to look at it honestly.
Yeah.
And when you are looking at somebody or something that you love, you have to see it for its warts and all.
Mm-hmm.
And to look at things that are problematic, you now know what you can change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see this moment. I've had so many people, and you said this as well in our question box, ask like, you know, am I catastrophizing of what he can and can't do? Am I overthinking what he has the ability to do? Like, how do I understand this? And so, like, I want to speak to the Constitution, the justice system, the court system, the branches of government, the military. It didn't dissolve just because mm-hmm. Donald Trump came into power.
Yeah.
None of that just stopped happening because he got into power. So the function and stability of government is still there. There are still checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
There are still checks on his power. Now, the concern is how much of a sledgehammer is he going to be and how much damage is he going to be able to inflict on some of those institutions. But for example, when people, I had, I think like six mm-hmm. or seven people ask about like, is this our last election? Can he eliminate term limits?
Yeah.
So at a baseline to put forward a new constitutional amendment, which is what it would have to be. After FDR, there was mm-hmm. a constitutional amendment that said you can only do two terms. They don't have to be consecutive, but you can only do two. And once the second one's done, you're done.
That's crazy that it was only that long ago that that was put into place.
Yeah. Well, because FDR served four terms.
Oh, I thought it was only three. And I thought it was because he was at war, right? Wasn't that why?
So he died because there was no... It was precedent, but FDR was the first to be popular enough to be able to change that.
Okay.
And thank God he was a good, decent man. He had his problems.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he died right at the start of his fourth term.
Okay.
So after that, Republicans were actually the ones that put forward term limits. So it was the two. Doesn't have to be consecutive, but at the end of the second, you're done. So to undo that, they would have to put in a new constitutional mm-hmm. amendment. So
yeah, what does it take to do a new constitutional amendment?
So you need at a minimum 60 mm-hmm. senators. You would need 2/3 of the mm-hmm. House of Representatives. So that would be almost 300 mm-hmm. House members. Then after that, it has to go to the states and be ratified by 2/3 of the states.
Mm.
So that's not happening.
Yeah.
It's not possible. So mm-hmm. if someone's telling you there's not going to be another election, it's not happening, short of something absolutely catastrophic and every single person in Congress, which is the House and the Senate, deciding we want a dictator, mm-hmm. it would require every single Democrat to turn their back on everything. And right now it's looking like Trump is going to have 52 senators. And that's a best case scenario mm-hmm. in this environment. So I think I just want to say that to yeah. say like democracy has not died. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people that would say actually mm-hmm. democracy won. There are a lot of people who feel really angry and really scared.
Yeah.
And fear is a motivator. Mm-hmm. And I think something that I've been grappling with as I've been reflective of this loss as well is mm-hmm. people, and this is where it's going to get a little bit political and veer a little bit away from like mental health. But I think part of this is mental health because I think we have to have empathy for other people. And I think there were a lot of people in this country who did not feel Democrats were speaking to their very real economic concerns and fears. Yes, she was talking about housing policy. Yes, she was talking about, you know, opportunity economy. Yes, mm-hmm. she was talking about, mm-hmm. You know, giving $50,000 to new businesses. But for a lot of people, they're like, I already own a home. I'm afraid I can't continue to afford my home. Mm-hmm. I can't afford my groceries. My industry is dying, right? Like I can't find a job. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And there was no language speaking to that. And Trump comes mm-hmm. in and says to people, everything that you are mm-hmm. afraid of and more is true and valid. And anybody mm-hmm. tells you not to be afraid of that is the devil. They're evil. They're hurting you. They're out to get you. I'm the only mm-hmm. one that can save you. And so I really, mm-hmm. I feel frustrated because I think mm-hmm. there are very real concerns in this country. There are very real frustrations. There are very real broken mm-hmm. systems that need to be fixed. Donald Trump just is not the person to do it. And he doesn't care about fixing it.
Right.
And so for me, in my experience, what's frustrating is I feel like torn between these two worlds, like a solid understanding of the political and how government works and all that, but also this like emotional, like mm-hmm. mental understanding, and empathy is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is I think I go back and forth between being like, what can we learn from this? How can we have hope? How can we do better? And just desolate, like hopeless, furious.
Yeah.
And I think there is a time and a place for both. And I think
– yes.
I think we all need to give ourselves space to be wherever we are. I think some people
for sure.
need to go right into action and they need to start fundraising or getting involved, and they need yes. to start doing things, and they need to stay in motion. And some people need to rest and log off and disconnect.
Yep.
And I think some people need to rage, and some people need to be heartbroken. And I think that it is okay wherever you are. I think we all need different things.
Well, my other thought to that as well, and this is something that I've said to clients
yeah.
for a really long time outside of just the last couple of days, is action is the mm-hmm. antidote to anxiety. I had a conversation with a client this week and I asked her permission to share this story. She said, yes, please. And she's a brand new mom, has an infant that's a couple months old, little baby girl. And, you know, she was feeling really flooded and really anxious mm-hmm. going into this election, as everybody was, but kind of feeling like mm-hmm. the sense of hopelessness. And kind of like this existential mm-hmm. dread, which definitely I think her mm-hmm. daughter and having this newborn and being in kind of that mm-hmm. postpartum stage absolutely like heightened all of that. And so when we met, was today, actually. You know, I was kind of asking her like how she was feeling about things and all that. And she was emotional and she was tearful, but she went into, and I was just like, I was just so impressed with the way she approached it. And she's like, I just have to do something. She's like, I have to take action. I have to, she goes, I have to stop feeling like the world is absolutely mm-hmm. ending. And she goes, I have to stop waiting for the national government mm-hmm. to fix itself. And she goes, I have to take care mm-hmm. of my local community. I have to do something at the local level. And she's volunteering with all these different groups and organizations, and she's taking her baby with her. And, you know, she's like, I'm going to wrap Christmas mm-hmm. presents for needy kids with my baby, like in the next little bit. And she's like, I just want to teach her that she can still be yeah. a good person through all of this mess. And I just found that so beautiful and so empowering. And I think just like a really helpful message that I think even beyond, you know, as we've kind of talked about this idea of like, okay, like measure your threshold for what you think mm-hmm. you can and cannot do, right? I think even more so, part of why we're all feeling so overwhelmed and flooded is we are so freaking lonely. So many of us feel so alone. We feel like we don't have community. We feel like we don't have anybody. I am desperately urging you, even if you have like a friend group that you feel you can rely on, or family members or whatever, start doing things to foster those communities. Yeah. Whether you're building one, whether you're continuing to build on one, whether, you know, you want to take the one you're with in a new direction, like start building a sense of mm-hmm. belonging, and to start behaving in a way that makes you feel like you are building the world you want to see. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a cheesy way, but like even going back to earlier when we were talking about the idea of values,
yeah,
and the values that you have, if you value connection, if mm-hmm. you value love, if you value, you know, caring about people, mm-hmm. get a community, mm-hmm. go to your next door neighbor and say like, hey, we've lived next to each other for God knows how long. I just want to say hi mm-hmm. and introduce myself and let you know if you ever need anything, within reason, I'm here, right? Mm-hmm. Get to know people. Look up, like, what is the particular issue, you know, to kind of bring it back to this election? Is it abortion?
Yeah.
Is it climate change? Is it voter rights?
Yeah.
Is it, like, just civic education? Like, what is the thing that you feel really motivated by? Look for your local group or community that is helping mm-hmm. build that.
Yeah.
Go to your library. Like, be willing to engage in these communal spaces that we have lost.
Mm.
And, you know, invite people over for a book club that isn't just, like, fairy smut, which, like, hashtag guilty. I read those things, too. I read those for escapes. But, like, I'm really asking people to like push themselves in the information that they are consuming, that it's not just from social media.
Mm-hmm.
Start reading books that have a different title than you would normally like read. Like venture into nonfiction, learn about things, understand things. In your book clubs, have conversations about this stuff
mm-hmm.
and just like build the community that you wish was coming to save you.
Mm. Yeah.
Because nobody is coming to save you. And that's okay, because now you get to save yourself. And I know like the oldest daughter is going to be like, but I'm tired of saving myself. Like, I get it. I feel the same way sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think if you choose to look at it through a lens that is empowering,
mm-hmm.
it changes the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really felt compelled to share that for a lot of you who are like, well, what do we do now? Like, how do we do this? Like, how do I live through a mm-hmm. Trump administration?
Mm-hmm.
You build the very thing he's trying to destroy.
Mm.
He wants you to feel isolated. He wants you to feel alone. He wants you to feel scared, as does his administration and everybody that's in it.
Yeah.
That is how they win.
Yeah.
They win, you know, and I'm sure someone's going to get upset at me for saying this, and that's fine. But people that felt lonely, people that felt scared, people that felt that they didn't have anybody looking out for them, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm really encouraging you to start looking inward and stop pointing fingers at like, well, this person didn't do that and this person didn't do that. Like the Democratic apparatus is going to figure itself out.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Yeah.
Your job is to take care of the city you live in, the town you live in, the street you live on, the house you live in. Like that is your job. And I've just found myself feeling like even more and more passionate about that beforehand. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm biased because I'm moving to a new community. So I'm now being forced to like implement some of these, you know, actions. But I really think the antidote to a lot of this pressure and this stress, however that looks and however it's going to come, mm-hmm. is going to be having people that you feel you can turn to in real life. Mm-hmm. Not just social media, not just going through stories and having all of like your worst fears and triggers validated, but to have real people that you can text and turn to and call together mm-hmm. and take action together, mourn together, however that looks. Mm-hmm. And I will now step off of my very tall soapbox and I will let you respond.
I think that was great, Sam. I just got so much like, how do I deal with family members? How do I deal with friends who are part of MAGA or who voted for Trump and you never imagined that they would vote for Trump? And I think that we all have to decide for ourselves what works for us, what our limits are, what is tolerable mm-hmm. for us. And I think that it's really hard. And I wish there was like an easy answer to just like, if they do this, you do this. If they do that, you do that. Right. But I think for some people, it is going to be like unsafe. For example, like if you're a queer person, if you're a queer person of color, like, I mean, there are certain communities that it might not be super safe. And depending on how like unhealthy the community you're in is. And then for some of us, it's uncomfortable. And it's I think we all have to think about, is that person respectful? Are they tolerant to different people's ideas? I'm not saying that you can't be mad at them, frustrated by them, have all of the feelings you're having with them. But I think what's also really hard is a lot of our social interaction comes from social media. So we are like very in these bubbles of people who we already believe the same things as. And it is very tempting in times like this, which I completely understand, is to just want to shut down, cut off. And you might need to, like Thanksgiving in 3 weeks, like might be the time to skip Thanksgiving. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I would also caution you from like making a broad sweeping decision right now. Like as therapists, one of the number one things most therapists say is don't make a life-changing decision based on like a temporary feeling. And you may feel differently in a couple months. I don't know. I think there's so much, and we talked about this in an episode that's going to come out soon about parental estrangement, but I think there is so much like rhetoric sort of and talk on the internet about if this person does this to you, cut them off, don't keep them in your life. You are who the company you keep. That's some of the subtext I'm hearing too from some people who are like, I had friends who voted this way. Am I a bad person almost for having friends like this or having people I know like this? And while I completely, again, understand, I don't know whether you can be friends with them or not. You're going to have to decide that for yourself, and you're going to have to decide how much you value that friendship, how much if you have values in common. Maybe your values look different and you think that they're sorely mistaken with how they chose to vote based on what they say their values are. But I also think you have a right to have low contact, to pull away, to have limited contact, to also have it be fluid and decide what you want to do in real time as well. And you don't have to make a sweeping declaration and say, anyone who voted this way, screw you.
And there is nothing wrong with you that you have people in your life that voted for this person. You are not like betraying your set of mm-hmm. values because you know someone that made that choice, just like you made a choice.
So I think also as I'm looking through a lot of the comments, a lot of the questions I got, like I'm so struck by how many people are like, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to feel angry. I don't want to feel rageful. I don't want to hate half the country. I don't want to hate everyone in my life. And I'm just struck by, I don't know, like I think we've been circling around the idea of hope. And I think another theme that I've seen come up a lot is, and I felt this way, my reaction to things when they don't go my way is to be like, well, I shouldn't have done that. Like, I'm just so bad at being bad at things, I think, sometimes, for lack of a better word. It's not bad to have hope. We have to have hope. It doesn't mean you have to have hope all the time or feel hopeful all the time, but having joy, having hope, in the same way in grief, when we feel really grieving of things, but then we have positive moments, it's good that you have that. We have to have that to be able to keep going.
Yeah. I think the fear and the catastrophizing is to be expected. Mm-hmm. When you know you have somebody that is throwing around the threats and the verbiage and the way that he speaks. And mm-hmm. So I think to pause, if you find yourself like spinning down into this, like, it's going to be the end, it's over, it's done, da, 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 to pause and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to be. To embrace the uncertainty, which I know is really hard and really spicy. And then to mm-hmm. turn it all back inward and say, what can I do to take care of my life today? Even if we feel powerless to protect ourselves at the federal level or are concerned about what's going to happen or what's going to come down, which is why I went on that like sermon about community a few minutes ago, because I think, how can you take care of you today?
Yeah.
How can you take care of the space that you live in? Mm-hmm. How can you take care of yourself? Who can you reach out to and ask for love or share love? I think when you start to cast out that anxiety net and it gets too far out, that's where you get overwhelmed. Mm. And so reel it back into your brain and say, what is in my circle of control today? What can I do today that would make me feel hopeful about my life and the world? Mm-hmm. Even if it is like a freaking tea light worth of effort.
Yeah.
Right. But there has to be effort in taking back the power and control that you have. Mm. And spending time nurturing and loving and enjoying your life while still fighting, while still advocating, while still remaining aware. Like, we're not talking about ignorance.
Yeah.
Like, we're not talking about shutting down and shutting off from information. We're talking about caring for your life while staying informed over here. Mm-hmm. You guys were the first ones we thought about when all this happened. And so thanks for coming on this messy, windy history, mental health, like, advocacy journey. And we just wanted you to know you're not alone, and maybe share a little bit of additional insight or perspective of how you haven't thought about things.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. And we will be back with our regularly scheduled programming on Wednesday.
Bye, guys. Bye.